From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 235, recorded live Thursday, September 30th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Eric Herbranson about making your hobby a profession.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Thinking about turning a hobby into a company. A lot of people out there go down to the valley and they make a lot of money. Is it something that you can do when you're 20, when you're 30, when you're 40? Well, we've got Eric Herbranson on the show. He is turning a hobby into a company. Thanks, Eric, for chatting with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you have a real job and you have this side thing. Is that right?
Yeah. I do iPhone and Android development by day, and by night I'm the masked coder of Audio Orchard.
Audio Orchard, and you're changing the name soon, so people can also find it as Scratch Audio?
Scratch Audio, yeah. We got the old cease and desist letter, so it's one thing to watch out for when you're a startup that falls into the category of the many things you don't know that you don't know about. legal battles over names is not fun.
So start at the beginning. You're an iPhone developer, you're a mobile developer, and then one day you decide people need to do online audio mixing, and you pick Silverlight. How does this start? Take me back to the beginning.
Yeah, so it really started with a sort of off the cuff discussion with a couple guys I was working with at the time, and we were just talking about things that would be fun projects, things that would be interesting. We were a little bored of the project we had at the time, and so we were just kind of brainstorming, and we started talking about audio and what you could do there, and kind of started talking about, well, I wonder if you could do audio in the browser yet, if is the technology there? So we did a little digging around, a little researching, and found that, you know, Flash had just added some, you know, the sort of low-level audio support that would make that sort of thing possible, and Silverlight. Silverlight 3 beta had like been announced that week. So we started playing around with it, and we started, you know, just kind of digging into these things, and turns out it was possible. And from there, it sort of turned into almost like a dare of like, well, who actually wants to do this? So that's kind of how it started. You know, from there, it kind of became, well, that's kind of interesting. You know, it started with, yeah, you can do it. It took a couple weeks to play around and build sort of a prototype. And then it was like, well, but who cares, right? I mean, it's interesting to my geek friends and me that you can, but why would anybody else want to use that? I mean, there's GarageBand, there's Pro Tools, there's all sorts of things out there. You know, who cares that it's in the browser? So then we sort of talked about, well, what if it was online, what could you do that you can't do today? And we sort of quickly landed on this idea of being able to collaborate, which is something that's really painful today. If you're a musician and you want to collaborate with other people, you know, you sort of record some tracks, you zip them up, you email them to somebody, and you wait to get stuff back from them. It's really manual. It's not fun, and it doesn't work well. So that's kind of where the project started, and from there it just kind of evolved, and kind of lots of people I talked to thought it was a great idea, and so it kind of turned into, well, I want to turn this into a real company. So.
Well, you kind of glossed over a little middle part there. It's a lot like the Far Side cartoon where the little scientist is trying to come up with the answer to the universe's questions, and he has like a bunch of equations, and then a miracle happens, and then a bunch of equations.
Right.
So you had this idea, and then you sat down, and a few weeks later, a prototype popped out. Had you learned Silverlight before? I mean, you said you were an Android and iPhone developer.
Well, I have actually a lot of experience in .NET, doing Windows applications and web applications, and have done a lot of different kind of stuff. I hadn't done Silverlight before. I had dabbled in some WPF stuff, you know, a couple of admin screen kind of things. So I didn't have a ton of experience in it. But I really like the technology. I love C#. It's one of my favorite languages to work in. And you know, we, one of the things early on was, you know, you, you, you can do this in Flash. You can do this in Silverlight. You can do it in JavaFX if you want to go that route. You know, there's or a Java applet or something like that. You know, so there's multiple routes. So there's kind of some discussion with, you know, talked with a lot of people early on about, you know, trying to come up, pick the best technology. You know, we settled on Silverlight for a couple of reasons. One is it just the sheer performance, you know, I guess HTML5 is another one I should throw out there. There's some low level audio stuff you can do there. The performance just isn't there yet, for, you know, trying to process, multiple tracks of audio in real time in JavaScript just didn't seem plausible. it just doesn't have the horsepower there. Flash suffers a little bit from the same thing. There's performance isn't quite as good from the characteristics and the numbers that we were looking at. And the other big one was access to threading. You know, there's lots of stuff that we wanted to be able to take care of in the background. You know, doing various things that we, you know, wanted to put on a low priority thread so it could get done when there's time, but don't slow down the audio processing. Flash didn't really have a good way to do that. So those things together kind of, made us pick Silverlight.
And when did you find the time to do this? I mean, you have a full-time job. I mean, do you have kids and a wife?
Yeah, I got a wife and three kids. You know,
well, now you're just showing off.
That's one of the things. Sorry.
I said, now you're just showing off. Three kids.
Yeah. They're a lot of fun, but a lot of work. So yeah, so finding the time is difficult. You know, it's a lot of, after everyone goes to bed kind of thing. So, it's, you know, you tuck the kids in, you wait till the wife is tired, and then you sit down and you start coding sort of your second job, if you will. So, so I guess that would be one thing to say about, you know, turning a hobby into a business is it's definitely got to be something you're really committed to, because it is a massive time commitment. You know, make sure you've talked about it with your wife beforehand. It was certainly one of the mistakes I made was, you know, I got really excited about the idea, started coding and kind of decided I was going to make this into a company. And then, oh, by the way, wife, this is going to be a big time commitment. Are you okay with that? So, you know, that was some things we had to work out early on in this project. And just finding a balance, you know, for us, it was, you know, saying, well, putting time caps on stuff. We're not, you know, I won't work more than this many nights a week. You know, and, you know, weekends will work out this way so that there's plenty of time for family time and time to work on the project.
Do you mind sharing how that kind of worked out? I mean, what did you end up coming up with? We've had a couple of shows on geek relationships, and I think both the men and women who listen to the show who might be interested in turning a hobby into the company might want to understand how do they make that negotiation with the spouse, with the husband or wife about, I want to do something that is separate from work and separate from family, and it's going to take, you know, 20 to 30 additional hours a week that we do right now with other stuff. I mean, how do you broach right. that, and what did you end up coming up with as your compromise?
So, I mean, the first thing is for us is just talking about it a lot, you know, trying to be good about, hey, you know, how are you feeling? Last week was kind of busy. You know, are you doing okay? Do we, you know, should I dial it back this week? And just trying to talk about it a lot. That's something I'm terrible at, but my wife is phenomenal at. So I sort mm-hmm. of am lucky there, that's just what she does well. And so, that's the biggest thing is just constantly communicating about it. You know, and there's weeks where, you know, my wife is a teacher. So there's weeks where she's exhausted and it's just kind of, all right, I'm going to pass on working this week. And there's weeks where she's exhausted and she says, you know what, just go ahead and work this week because I don't want to talk or do anything anyhow. So it's just kind of a lot of playing it by ear. You know, and then just sort of being proactive about it. You know, hey, honey, I really want to get this feature out by next weekend. I think I'm going to need, you know, 6 to 8 hours this weekend. Is that possible? Where do you think we could schedule that in? Mm-hmm. And then a lot of it is just giving up sleep.
Yeah, I was going to say, really, the only way to sneak more hours out of the day is to steal them.
Yeah, right.
Now, before I've talked to the guy from secretgeek.net, who's known for talking about micro ISVs, and we did a little bit of a show on micro ISVs, and he mentioned that programmers are not marketers, and you found this yeah. to be the case as well. I mean, having a one-person company means you're the accountant and you're the webmaster and you're the programmer and you're the marketing guy.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's probably the hardest thing about, you know, starting a company is again, the things that you don't know that you don't know. And you sort of learn them along the way. So, you know, I imagine like a lot of other programmers, you know, I've worked for other companies, you know, for 10 years and constantly am saying, man, what are these guys doing? You know, I would do this so much better. And it's like now that it's my job to actually do it, it turns out it's harder than you suspected. You know, things like how are we going to let people know about this? You know, there's sort of, this naive notion, at least for me, that, you know, oh, well, social media has really changed this game. And now you just, you know, you create a Twitter account and a Facebook page and, you know, and you build it and they come. And it turns out that it's harder than that. So it's definitely something to think about ahead of time is, you know, how am I going to let people know about this product? And it's going to be harder than, you know, expect it to be hard, and it will be 2 times harder than that at least.
And it seems like, if I may, with a project like yours, there's two audiences. There's the looky-loos, and then there's the people who would appreciate it. I know that when I first heard about Audio Orchard, that I said, wow, a multi-track editor in Silverlight? I need to see that. You know, because I thought of it in a wow, that's curious. I didn't know Silverlight could do that. Or what a weird thing to put in a browser. But, you know, other than playing with it for an hour, it really wasn't. I mean, I'm not the target audience. So how do you get the initial traffic of the crush of people who want to see this weird new thing? You know, look at the Elephant Man and get all that eyeball traffic, and then turn those into people who would actually spend time using the product.
Yeah. So luckily for me, there's an amazing, a really large crossover between programmers and musicians. I feel like 80 to 90% of the programmers I know also play an instrument. So that's sort of a lucky advantage that I have. You know, a lot of people will show up and check it out, you know, because it is interesting. Wow, cool. You can do that in a browser. But they're also musicians, so they'll stick around and use it for a while. But it's definitely, you know, that's part of that, again, learning about marketing and sales and how do you position the product? How do you make sure that you've pitched it in such a way that people understand, oh, this isn't just neat tech, look cool, interesting, and then go away? How do you present it in such a way that people kind of see it as something that actually solves a pain point for them? You know, something that, oh yeah, it is really frustrating that I record a song and I'd like my buddy from, you know, some other state to lay down a guitar track. And how do I get him to do that? And, you know, how do I, you know, in that maybe 1 minute that I have, that, you know, that somebody looks for the technical geek reasons, let them know that it's more than just that. You know, and that's very much a learning process. That's, you know, things I'm figuring out as I go along. And it's a lot of talking to people who have tried it out and finding out, you know, did you catch that it also does this, you know? And then just trying to improve it, watch people use it and try and improve it.
Have you done any actual marketing?
You know, I've done a little bit of experimenting with some pay-per-click. But for the most part, you know, marketing, you know, when you're starting your own business, unless you're, independently wealthy, in which case you're probably not doing what I'm trying to do. You know, you don't have a ton of cash to do marketing. So it really is, another one of those terms you learn when you start trying to do this is guerrilla marketing. And that's the idea of the sort of low cost grassroots kind of marketing. It's, you know, trying to get people to blog about it, get people to, you know, it's all the social media stuff, getting people to Twitter about it, tweet about it. Wow. I can't believe I said Twitter. That's so
not you sound like a marketer.
Geek of me. I know. I like dropped two points on the geek scale right there.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team. even if they're in different countries. By combining Intuitive User Interface and the power of Silverlight, Team Pulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself, get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TLERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us. Is this something that you sit down and task out? Because I have found in my experience that programmers are extremely good at laying out a discrete task. If that discrete task is get this feature running or set up a continuous integration server. But do guerrilla marketing rarely gets written down? So I'm curious, and I'm kind of pinning you down a little bit. Did you say, all right, it's Tuesday, I'm going to do 3 hours of marketing work, or is this something that's organic? And if so, as I suspect it might be, do you think that might hold you back a little bit?
Yeah, no, there's no question that it holds me back. And it's, you know, honestly, it's one of the most difficult things is, you know, when you have a limited, you've got a limited amount of time, right? There's only so many hours you can put into this thing. So I've, you know, let's say I've got 3 hours I can work on something tonight, and I can either put it into some sort of guerrilla marketing, which is something I don't necessarily know how to do, and it's a little more in the touchy-feely side, or I can program features X, Y, and Z and have them done and tested and working. And it's really easy to go, well, I'm going to do the features because I know what I'm going to get in my 3 hours for that. And so it's really, it becomes a process of, you know, just telling yourself, nope, I'm going to, tonight is marketing night. And so I'm going to put effort into that. And the other thing is, you know, find partners. It's not the kind of thing you can do by yourself, most likely. So find somebody who's interested in the marketing side, who's interested in what you're doing. You know, if the company you're trying to build has any chance of succeeding, it's got to be interesting to people. So find somebody with a marketing bent who's interested in it, and, you know, give them some equity and get them involved and let them start moving down that path. And that's what I've had to do. And that's been a huge help.
Have you found any partners? And if so, where did you look for them? Did you look at the local user group, or did you find any college interns?
You know, I haven't found any college interns. I've toyed around with that idea. You know, I spent a lot of months just working by myself, just kind of trying to get the basic idea all in place. And before I started looking for anyone else. I did find, once I sort of got the initial beta out there, I had an old friend who used to, write guitar effects for Fender guitars, and I was able to get him involved. So that's been huge. He's got a lot more of the low level, you know, writing EQs and low pass filters and these types of things that I don't know anything about. So that's been huge from a technical standpoint. But also once I kind of got it out there and was able to start, kind of showing it around, I guess one thing that was really interesting is there's a huge startup community in my town. I live in Phoenix. And it seems to be that's true everywhere. So, you know, it's finding those, like you said, user groups and those, you know, those groups of people in your town, meeting with them, talking with them. And through that, I attended a user group where someone was speaking, showed him my product. He got really excited about it. And, you know, he's been helping with the marketing and sort of, biz dev side of things.
And how is it going? I mean, let's just be frank. At what point will the wife call it a success?
You know, the wife will call it a success when she gets a vacation out of the cash brought in. I think that's when it will be a success for her. For me, you know, it'll be a success when it becomes profitable. So that's still a little ways out for us, but we're making slow progress. You know, that's another thing about starting a company. It's a long road, and it's, you know, expect it to take a long time. And again, it's going to take 2 times longer than that. So, you know, it's not, there's a few of those, that hit and are instantly successful. It probably won't be you.
where are your primary costs? Most people who think about startups are either going to sell an application in an app store or like you're doing, which is selling an application slash service that's in the cloud somewhere. Where are your costs? Where are your primary costs other than your family, your familial costs?
Right. You know, for me, hosting is kind of a big one, although that's been rectified. I had, hosting.com actually, gave us a really good deal and basically eliminated our costs. Also, and I should mention, we're a part of the BizSpark program. And that helped drop a lot of our costs too, because that covered all our licenses for, you know, SQL and IIS and everything we needed. So that's been a huge help.
Do you worry about the Spark programs? Because the idea is, for those who may not be familiar with those programs, is that Microsoft gives you licenses for the first 3 years to get your startup started. And then 3 years later, presumably, if your startup is still around, then they start to charge you.
Yeah.
Exactly. That makes your costs zero now, but do you feel that they're going to get you later?
Well, so you get 3 years. And in the startup world, that's probably, that's a long time. So in 3 years, either you're a wild success and the license costs are a non-issue at that point, or, you've given it your best shot and it's not working and you're probably done. So, you know, it's got a very nominal exit fee. I think it's $100 after 3 years. But you get to also keep all the licenses you had. You just no longer get to, you know, new licenses to everything that comes out.
I see. So you didn't feel too bait and switched. You don't feel like they're coming for you in 3 years.
No. It very much felt like a no brainer to me. I mean, $100 in 3 years makes it a total non-issue. It's something to not worry about compared to everything else I have on my plate that I do worry about. So.
Well, I'm interested in that because you are as a mobile person who sells things in an app store, as well as this model where there is no app store. You know, the model in the Apple world is, isn't it like spend $100 on the, to get into the marketplace at that point? That's pretty much it.
Well, no, the Apple world's a little different. You actually have to, you have to buy in to be able to put things into the marketplace. So you're paying, it's still a fairly nominal. I think it's $100 as well. So it's about the same price, just you're paying it up front instead of at the exit.
Except their developer tools are free.
Their developer tools are free, but again, through the BizSpark program, the developer tools are licenses are also covered. So I have Visual Studio licenses for me and the couple guys that are working with me.
Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with other guys bringing into other guys and gals bringing them into the project? When you have a company that is in the garage, do you say, I'll give you 1% of nothing? Or do you give them beer and chips? What do you pay them in?
You pay them in equity. So it's, you know, some percentage of the company, which basically is, you know, is worth nothing at this point, but, you know, for both the guys that I'm working with, you know, they believe in the product, you know, they're especially the guy who's from Fender, he just loves something to work on that, you know, is around, processing audio. So for him, it's, you know, it's much like me. It's a hobby. If the business side completely fails, it's still a fun hobby. So, you know, so there's that. And then the equity is, you know, hopefully this does take off. And at that point, you know, there's a cash payout as well. So all the better.
Do you think that if this whole thing went south and it just became a hobby, that would be really okay? You have such a positive attitude. I'm curious.
It would be hugely disappointing, but it would still have been a very fun project. And there's been a lot of really great things that have come out of this for me. You know, I've got to meet a lot of cool people. I've got to be on some cool podcasts. and so it's had a lot of advantages that would make it, not a complete loss if the thing went belly up.
Mm-hmm. So switching gears to the technical, you're doing raw audio processing in the browser inside of Silverlight. Did you ever think you would hit a wall with that? You'd want to make why in the browser and why not a chubby client?
Right. Yeah. Well, so as I kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, you know, there's hundreds, if not thousands of people who make, you know, fat client installed applications for multi-track recording. Just didn't feel there was any chance of breaking into that market. So kind of felt to do this, we'd have to have something very, very distinct and different about what we are doing. So putting it in the browser and making it a highly collaborative tool, we kind of felt like gave us a distinguisher that a lot of these, fat clients couldn't quickly jump to. You know, it wasn't the kind of thing where it's just an additional feature they could quickly add. And then again, we'd have no distinguisher. So that was really important early on was that, that we had something like that. So that was the idea. There were definitely concerns about, you know, how possible would this be? And would we hit some point where, oh, you just can't do that? You know, and there's still concerns about that, but I guess those are some of the risks you kind of just have to take. You know, we did enough prototyping up front that it was a calculated risk, I guess. And we knew what we were risking, and we felt pretty good about the possibility that it would work. And so far it's worked really well.
So you haven't hit, I mean, what kind of technical challenges have you hit where you thought that that was the wall? Like, oh, we just hit it. That's it. You can't do X, Y, Z in Silverlight.
You know, there's still a little concern about, a few different types of microphones, especially people who have these, you know, massive banks, you know, that something that has 16 audio channels coming in, and will we be able to pull all 16 of those so they can record 16 tracks at one time? It looks like it's going to be possible, but we haven't gotten there yet. But you know, you make contingency plans. So worst case scenario, we do some sort of, additional ActiveX control for IE and a Firefox plugin that we can then talk to that can get down to that low level. Again, those are sort of more of the edge case people. So, you know, it's less than ideal, but you know, those are the things where we kind of go, man, I really hope that works out. And just being up against the CPU, you know, it's pretty intensive trying to deal with, 10 tracks of, you know, 44.1 kilohertz audio and putting multiple effects on each track and combining them all and keeping it in real, close enough to real time that people, you know, that it's usable. You know, it's a constant battle. And, you know, in fact, we, at our last release, we, or maybe it was two releases ago now, we ran into a problem with that where we put out our version, and all of a sudden there were all these, you know, the performance was, you know, most people's CPUs were being pegged, and we couldn't figure out what we had done that had changed that. And man, that is a horrible feeling. You're just like, what about that feature we just added is breaking the CPU? And it turned out after we messed around with it for a while, we had changed something so that there was a blur effect on the sort of the root element that was normally set to zero blur, but when we did some certain transitions, we'd sort of, you know, we would use a transition to blur it, to sort of do a blur effect. Well, that was causing the entire screen to have to redraw every frame. So you're trying to redraw the entire screen at 60 frames a second, and that's not so good for your CPU.
How long did it take you to figure that out?
It took, let me think, a couple nights of dabbling around. You know, it started with removing the feature that I thought was the problem, only to realize that made no difference. And then you just sort of started stripping stuff away, and none of the audio stuff made a difference. So eventually, just happened to turn on, there's some really cool development, things you can turn on the redraw rectangles. I forget exactly what it's called, but, it basically shows you visually on the screen what part of the screen is being redrawn. And the entire screen just started lighting up and is one big block of giant redraw. And so then it was a matter of removing things from the visual tree until that stopped. And then it was, once we found it, it was really obvious. Oh, of course, a blur even at zero is causing the entire screen to redraw. So we just had to rethink how we did that. And then it wasn't a hard fix once we found it.
So you've said that the thing that would allow you to be distinguished from the other multi-track editors out there was the fact that you're online. So other than the fact that you're inside the browser, what is it that you do that is unique?
Yeah. So we store then all the audio files that you record, on our server. So what that means is, you know, if you record part of a song, you can invite your friend, or, you know, from whoever it might be to participate. They basically get a link and they can just show up. It'll automatically, you know, download everything to their computer so they can work with it all right there. So it solves a bunch of problems that musicians have today in terms of, just one is, you know, this is a free tool at this point. You know, you don't have to worry about, oh, I've got GarageBand and you have Pro Audio. You know, we can use the same tool. It's, you know, because it's Silverlight, it's cross platform, which not a lot of the audio tools out there today are. You know, it makes it really easy to invite people to manage, you know, this person can access this part. This person, isn't allowed to work with it. As well as we make it really easy then for when people are done to, you know, easily share this to Facebook and Twitter and then let people share it to their existing sort of fan base, which is, you know, my set of friends who will care about my music. You know, and then from there we let those people, and this is actually going to be coming in our next version, but, we let those people sort of make remixes, you know. So again, since we're storing all this data, you know, I don't want anonymous person, A to come in and tweak with my song, but I don't mind if they can sort of make a full-fledged copy and tweak with that all they want, as long as it doesn't affect my song. So that's some of where we're trying to go with this. That sort of things that existing tools just don't have a way to do that we think will be really exciting to musicians.
Sounds a little bit like GitHub for music.
Yeah, that's exactly. A lot of people make that comparison. Another one, a lot of people call us the Google Docs for music.
Ah. And is this something where you can edit as well? Or how prepared does the audio file have to be before it's uploaded?
Today, any WAV file will work. You know, eventually we'll be adding MP3s and a handful of other formats, but yeah, any WAV file you can upload. We have a partnership with a loop company, so there's a 1,000 free loops in there that you can use completely royalty free today. So, you know, if you show up and you want to get started, you know, there's a lot there for you to play with in terms of, you know, just basic drum beats and stuff to start recording against. And, you know, then any microphone that shows up as a audio device on your computer will work for recording. You can record that and it all gets uploaded to our server.
And can you trim and edit afterwards?
Yep. And that's something we just added in our last release. So you can, you know, if something's not lined up quite right, you can move it. You can trim the beginning and the end of the, you know, if you hear a mouse click at the end or whatever, or you made a mistake at some point, you can sort of trim that out. There's a lot more coming in that area, but, it's, you know, it's, the goal is to be a very full featured, multi-track recorder.
Huh. Well, very cool. Maybe we'll. Do you have any podcasts that are editing up there?
That would be great. We haven't seen any of that yet, but it's definitely doable.
Cool. Maybe some of the listeners will check it out. So right now you're at audioorchard.com. In the next few weeks, as you make your legally required name change, what's the best way for people to find you?
We will be scratchaudio.com, but we'll hold on to the Audio Orchard domain and forward it on. So either one should work for the foreseeable future.
Very cool. Well, Eric Herbranson, thanks so much for chatting with me today on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.